Hi, everybody. I'm Sue Herrera, CNBC anchor at large. I want to welcome you to our all spring video presentation and update on the state of the global markets and the global economy. It's a pleasure to be with you today, and joining me with their insights, John Baranko, Chief Investment Officer, Fundamental Investments at Allspring. And also joining us from London is Dan Morris, Chief Investment Officer, Systematic Investments for Allspring. Gentlemen, it is a pleasure to see you. Thank you so much for joining me today.
It's great to be with you, Sue. Thank you.
Absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you.
We have a lot to talk about. You know, in my 40 plus years of covering Wall Street and global events, I've basically covered almost every major story there is. I never, however, thought I would be covering a pandemic, a war, an energy crisis, and the reordering of the global economic map all at one time. So this is definitely a first for me. But that's really where we find ourselves today. We find ourselves, I think, at the end of one era and the beginning of another era. And it's an era full of high volatility, diverging macroeconomic conditions, and needless to say, incredible uncertainty. So it's no wonder that investors find themselves at a bit of a loss. So our goal, and I don't envy you this, gentlemen, because it's a difficult environment, but our goal is to provide some independent and divergent perspectives on where we stand right now. You know, investors might want to embrace Allspring's approach instead of just following conventional wisdom, because there is absolutely nothing conventional about where we find ourselves now. So, John and Dan, I'm going to start this off with a look at the geopolitical landscape, which is dramatically different than what we saw last year. You have China on the forefront of a COVID policy that has interrupted the supply chain. You have the Ukraine war. You have the Middle East in play. You have Europe breaking into separate blocks based on the Ukraine war. So, John, I'll go to you first. What type of risk does this conglomerate of events pose for the markets?
Yeah, it's really, Sue, an amazingly interesting time that we live in right now. And one of the things that, you know, if you look at the market environment and you look at, you know, the challenges that we've had, it creates, you know, all kinds of emotions, right? And part of that emotion is due to the negative returns in the market, you know, across many asset classes. And part of that is due to, you know, the volatility in the markets. This year alone, we've had 49% of the trading days trade with a 1% dispersion in the markets on any given day, right? So investors have gone through a lot as we've tried to struggle through these various dynamics, not only globally, but in, you know, in the United States and in other countries around the world. You know, the global situation, I think, it is evolving every day. It's very complicated. It obviously, I think, probably starts with the war in Ukraine and then the situation that we have in Russia. And, you know, to us, there is, you know, multiple dynamics of this. I think the first thing you have to look at is just, you know, the heroic spirit of the Ukrainian people. They're embracing democracy. They're embracing freedom. They are rallying around a leader and really rising to the occasion to take on, you know, the challenges that they face from Russia. You also have to think through the context in terms of Russia and Vladimir Putin, and ultimately, you know, what his end game is in Ukraine. And I think that, you know, that conflict in and of itself, many people thought was improbable and created a lot of challenges in the market earlier in the year, and ultimately now has kind of manifesting itself in, you know, contributions to inflation and contributions to other global dynamics that are occurring. And so, you know, our view, I guess our standard view is, you know, in the end that Vladimir Putin is a very pragmatic leader when it comes to serving his own self-interests. We think that the Ukrainian sovereignty is going to be important for President Zelensky to maintain, and that there will be a negotiated settlement, but that's going to take quite some time. And in the meantime, you have all kinds of geopolitical dynamics that relate to energy policies and inflation and all the other, you know, contributing factors globally.
You know, Dan, weigh in on that, because I think John kind of laid it out for us so well. What's happening in Ukraine and the dynamic between Russia and the different countries around the world, which we'll get into in just a second, certainly presents investors with a challenge that we've never seen before.
I think as it pertains to Russia and the Ukraine, I think energy is really the thing that's caused the most impact on the market. Obviously, one of the big impacts has actually been a lack of supply. That years of underinvestment in infrastructure and that challenge now and the reliance that Europe has on oil from Russia is really being highlighted in prices. But at the same time, what that's doing is diverting, because of sanctions, diverting oil that previously would have gone to Russia from Russia to Europe, actually towards the Middle East and Asia at lower prices. And so the supply dynamics have changed and the source has changed. But the markets are smart and consumers of oil are smart and they're finding other ways to source oil. So what we haven't seen is a big drop off in supply, and that demand impact hasn't really changed significantly, even despite potentially a much colder winter as we head into the new year.
What about the investment, either opportunities or risks, from your perspective? Both of you have just laid out a fascinating scenario, but a somewhat scary scenario to a certain extent as well. So how do you manage that risk from an investment standpoint?
First of all, what we've seen is inflation has been rising and growth has been falling. That's what we've seen this year. What we think we're going to see next year is inflation falling, but growth still falling, okay, at the same time. So what does that mean? Well, initially that can be good for bonds, actually, but that's a challenge for equities. It's mixed because of corporate earnings and how that's going to filter through to valuations. And so we see the first opportunities are actually in fixed income initially, and then potentially as the year goes on further into equity markets.
And John, from a fundamental standpoint, how would you invest either to guard against the risk that we've just talked about, or to be opportunistic?
Yeah, I think that that this is where bottom up fundamental research really matters, right? And then ultimately aligning that with in the case of geopolitics, geopolitical interests, right, and making sure that we fully understand that. So as we look across many of these different countries, and we can kind of get into some examples of kind of how we apply this in China and other places, but, it's very important for us to actually, do the research, be on the ground, make sure we understand what's happening in order for us to navigate those challenges in a prudent way for our investors.
Let's bring it on home to the United States. And John, we have basically been witnessing one of the most aggressive Feds in history. Talk to me about what your inflation projections are and whether or not we will see the Fed take the foot off the accelerator a little bit.
Yeah, I would say that we broadly feel that we're in a regime shift right now, right? And we've had, if you think about the last, 30 years, we've been in a period with, lower interest rates, low inflation, the ability of the Federal Reserve to stimulate the economy, in ways that have now changed. We're now in an inflationary environment, and the Federal Reserve is changing its posture in terms of ultimately withdrawing liquidity from the market in the form of quantitative, tightening, and ultimately raising interest rates to a level that gets inflation in check. We think that that is critical and foundation to the overall views of both the equity and the fixed income market. In the equity markets, that interest rates play a really important role in terms of valuing future cash flow. And so you've seen companies that have, cash flow that extend out in the future, typically high growth stocks, right, really discounted with interest rates going up, right, as ultimately people are reassessing the value of those future cash flows that are much further out on the horizon, versus more established companies that where you have a much more transparent visibility in terms of what those future cash flows look like. And so companies that have had that visibility in terms of near-term cash flow have performed better. Companies that ultimately have less visibility in terms of future cash flows have gotten hurt to a much greater degree. And we think that, as we move into next year, if we can start to see signs that inflation is peaking and we can start to see signs that that interest rate increases by the Federal Reserve are going to start to taper or moderate, I should say, that, you know, ultimately then the markets will be much more comfortable. The markets like predictability, and we're in a very kind of unpredictable time right now.
Dan, do you want to weigh in on that? I mean, the Fed raised rates by a half a percentage point. That was what the market was expecting. It did signal some more increases are likely, but the market does not seem to be shocked by it. But from a quant standpoint, you know, the traditional 60-40 portfolio, is that still relevant moving into the new year, given the backdrop of interest rates that we have now and the backdrop of inflation?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, because so many people, whilst they've got their individual portfolios they're monitoring, their overall wealth pot might look like a 60-40 portfolio. I mean, first of all, inflation being high now and then coming down, if we look 1 year out, then forward levels of inflation a year out are about 3%. So that's a pretty big drop from where we sit today. So it's a lot of uncertainty. And I think the uncertainty is the key. When we think about a 60-40 portfolio, the big reliance there is a negative correlation between equity and bonds. So, you know, when equities suffer, bonds provide a buffer, and vice versa. And for the last 20 years, that's exactly what we've had. What our research has shown is that when there's inflation uncertainty, that correlation between equity and bonds has become more positive. Now, actually, as that uncertainty is beginning to fall away, the correlation is decreasing again. So we're beginning to get back to a more diversified 60-40 portfolio. But something else to remember with a 60-40 portfolio, 60 equity, 40 bonds, is that's really about an 85% risk weight towards equity. So it's dominated by the equity risk premium. So if we're saying the 60-40 portfolio is no longer relevant, then we're kind of also making an inference about equity risk premium. And we certainly don't believe that to be true. Still see lots of potential within the long term for the equity risk premium.
Okay, let's talk then about investment opportunities. You both have done a fabulous job of kind of setting up the discussion. And, you know, Allspring has some fascinating ideas on how to invest in a new year. It's going to be an interesting one if 2022 has been any guide. So let's talk about what didn't do well this past year. Where, John, do you see opportunity going into a new year, given the interest rate environment and the global environment that we all just discussed?
Yeah, I think with, so if you reflect on 2021 and the years coming out of the COVID recession, we ultimately had, you know, a period where we had high growth, you know, going on in many of these names. And so you had multiple expansion in the FANG stocks and many growth stocks. And this year, the early part of the year has been all about that multiple contraction as interest rates have gone up. Mm-hmm. We think that where we are right now is ultimately the next derivative of that, which is, are we headed into an earnings recession with these companies as we head into 2023? What we're expecting to see is earnings start to deteriorate as we see companies report their quarters in the first part of 2023. Everybody's expecting that to be fairly significant. We're actually kind of wondering if it's a little bit shallower than people expect. I think that if you look at, you know, companies and how they've structured their balance sheets, many of them have extended and locked in capital for longer periods of time in a low interest rate environment. They have more flexibility on their balance sheet coming into this, you know, circumstance. And if we get to a point where we have more certainty around interest rates and companies can start to plan around that, it could be, you know, a better scenario than perhaps people expect. So, but I do think that, you know, as we look at earnings, there's one other really important dynamic. Energy as a component of S&P earnings represents the earnings in energy companies are up 146% this year. They are wildly masking the underlying dynamics in the S&P, where you have fairly significant earnings erosion, and ultimately, you know, sectors like communication services, consumer discretionary, financials, you know, all have negative earnings this year. And so some of this is playing out underneath the surface of the index. But you know, there's probably still a little bit more of that to occur in the first part of next year.
All right, Dan, what's on your agenda for 2023?
Well, picking up a little bit on what John just shared there about dispersion in the markets across within given sectors or within given markets. And I think we spoke a little bit about equity and bond and that correlation breakdown. So therefore, outside of those two asset classes, where are people going? I think they've really got two main choices. One is think about hedging the overall portfolio. And the second is looking at liquid alternatives. So what are some of those dynamics that John has spoken about that you can use to your advantage as an investor? And one clear area we see in the long run is some of those high volatility stocks in good times have actually shown some fantastic returns. But over the long run, some of those high beta stocks have actually underperformed the rest of the market quite significantly. So there's actually an opportunity there we see to short some of those high volatility stocks and redeploy that capital into businesses that we see have a better long-term fundamental makeup. Ultimately, that provides an asymmetric return profile. So investors can try and benefit from the market, but with some downside protection baked into that exposure. And we see that as a key opportunity for investors where there's that dispersion in the market. With the hedging approach, you can apply that to different parts of the portfolio or the overall portfolio. But there's no one size fits all with hedging, right? Markets could decline very quickly. They could decline quite slowly, and different hedging strategies perform very different in those different environments. So it's a case of trying to fine tune some of these different capabilities to exactly what investors are looking for. But those are two key areas where we believe people can both diversify their return source and provide some protection on the downside.
John, Dan laid out some very interesting strategies, some of which I haven't heard from other places on the street, which I think brings up the whole issue of divergent opinions from Allspring, which is why we're all here. But it also, some of those to me sound a little complicated, which brings up the topic, John, of active management versus passive management. How do you see that playing out in the new year, in 2023?
Yeah, I think that, the last decade, really characterized by low interest rates and central bank stimulus and, fiscal stimulus in the economy, really created an environment where you kind of had a tide lifting all boats, right? And companies very smartly took advantage of that, good companies and poor companies. Poor companies and locked in financing for a longer period of time. Good companies did the same thing, but also reinvested in their businesses and grew those businesses. And so if we are in this paradigm shift that we think is going on, ultimately that's going to manifest itself in a higher interest rate environment where some of those challenges will start to be exposed, right? And so you're going to see those lower quality companies who locked in financing, let's say, for a three-year period, you're going to start to see that financing roll off, and all of a sudden they're going to start to have financial distress, right? You're going to see companies that were able to invest through this trough ultimately do much, much better. And so we think it is actually entering into what could be a decade of excellence for active managers who really navigate this market in a prudent way and really take advantage of those dynamics.
Dan, do you think, given the whiplash that we've seen in the markets this past year, I've heard more and more people talk about combining quantitative strategies with fundamental strategies, even though they work in very different ways, obviously, which you've just laid out. But when I speak to individual investors, many of them only look at the fundamental side. That's been their whole way of investing. I get the sense that that is changing in a pretty dramatic way, because the fundamentals took so many people by surprise. It took the market by surprise this past year, and we've talked about them certainly, but it kind of shifted me more towards the quantitative side of things, where it takes the emotion out of investing. And I think that might be valuable in this environment.
I think there's a role for both. Fundamental investing is absolutely key to genuinely understanding the names that you're buying and investing in. That's critical. And to me, that will always remain. I think the partnership of the two within an overall portfolio context is really interesting to investors. The main reason being, just like we spoke about equities and bonds, when one is down, the other can support the other. We see the same is also quite often true with fundamental and quant strategies.
So if I could pick up on that a minute, one of the things that we've designed that marries both fundamental and the quantitative side of our business is a personalized investment capability that we call REMI. And ultimately what that does, REMI allows us to take institutional quality research, let's say in municipal bonds or in, you know, taxable bonds or some other, you know, part of the investment horizon, and utilize those ideas to create a customized portfolio for a client in which they have the opportunity to own those individual securities, and we will manage that for them in a tax-efficient way and in a way that's customized to their needs.
That's been one of the most fascinating areas of research that we've done as a business, coming together to see different ways of solving a problem. And that really is individualized customization, but at scale.
Obviously, not everyone on the street is taking this approach. Not everyone on the street has the type of instruments that John just laid out. But tell me more about this program and how an individual investor of relatively modest investment means it can benefit from that.
Yeah, well, let's build on the example that John gave about munis. I think it's a great one because it's an asset class that individuals are looking to invest in, but they're very aware of taxable gains that they perhaps don't want to realize. So what do we need to do? We need to benefit from the research of that fundamental muni team and its entire insight into that rich asset class. But then one person may have entered that portfolio in 2021, somebody else maybe in 2020, but they might want to hold the same portfolio. So how can we at scale understand that someone's gain from 2020 is different to the one from 2021, but still benefit from that same research? So using the models and the capabilities that we've built, we can effectively identify those holdings where they perhaps don't want to sell them yet, and others that they might want to sell to realize a loss. And that within the portfolio for these two individual investors get the benefit of the same muni team, but personalized towards their both individual needs. And that, I think, is a great example of where the quant skills come together with the fundamental skills and make it real for investors.
As we wrap things up, I'd like both of you to overall give me a kind of a thumbnail sketch of what you see 2023 looking like. John, I'll start with you. Are we in for another wild ride, or do you think things are going to steady out a little bit? How do you view the new investment year?
I think 2023 will be similar to 2022, except that we'll know how to handle it, right? So when it came into 2022 without, I don't think many of the industry participants had gone through an inflationary cycle or had gone through the challenges that we've been through. And so, but I do think that as we start to see the Fed get to a point where they start to pause on interest rates going forward, and hopefully that's in the first quarter or at the end of the first quarter, this maybe in the second quarter of the year, that we start to get more visibility and more confidence. I think that fixed income will be a very attractive investment with the enhanced yields that we have available going into that, right? And then ultimately, I think the equity markets, as we navigate through the earnings revisions that are going to occur in the first part of the year, will start to get much more attractive as we go into the back end of the year, and including growth investments.
And Dan, what are you expecting in 2023 from your standpoint?
Similar to John, interest rates stabilizing, inflation coming down from where it is now, heading towards more of a long-term average. With that increased certainty, we think the correlation between equity and bonds is going to become more negative. So therefore, that 60-40 portfolio is going to become more stable. Exactly as John said, I think the opportunity is a great one right now for fixed income investing. And then as that uncertainty of inflation begins to stabilize, I think growth stocks can begin to perform well as well, in line with John's thoughts there. But what I also see is investors have also been looking to keep cash liquid. There's been challenges in this year in particular about private markets. And so that liquidity within portfolios is absolutely key.
A quick comment before I let you both go on the aspect of recession. John, do you think that we will skirt a recession, maybe have a mild recession? or a deeper recession? I know a lot of it is dependent on the Fed, certainly, but what is your view there?
It is. I think that that our general view is that we're in for some sort of recession, probably a mild recession. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, corporations and the consumer have largely stayed pretty healthy up until this point. Now, we're starting to see signs where the consumer, we're starting to see, you know, credit card debt increase, and we're starting to see some signs of cracks in that. But to the extent that, you know, the job markets can stay healthy and we can get through a period where we get inflationary pressures to ease, as Dan highlighted, you know, then we'll likely see a slowdown in the economy, but hopefully it's this shallow recession that the Fed's been trying to engineer.
Yeah, I'd agree with John in terms of a more shallow recession. But the only other thought would be different parts of the globe are going to experience this differently. I think recessions could be quite localized as well within different regions. Certainly regions that are less energy secure, that could be felt more as they have more inflation pushing through how they spend and an inability to meet those needs, which forces them potentially into a more painful recession.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. I so appreciate your perspective. It's been a pleasure to spend time with you, and I think you've provided some really valuable insight from Allspring. Thank you again.
Thank you, Sue.
Thank you.
Visit allspringglobal.com to receive more market insights and investment perspectives from Allspring Global Investments. To hear the latest from our thought leaders on the ever-changing investment landscape, you can subscribe to the program on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening and joining us on the road to investing elevated.
The investment strategies described herein are those of Allspring Global Investments. These materials are being provided for illustrative and informational purposes only. The information contained herein is obtained from multiple sources that are believed to be reliable. However, such information has not been verified and may be different from the information included in documents and materials created by the sponsor firm in whose investment program a client participates. Some sponsor firms may require that these Allspring Global Investments materials are preceded or accompanied by investment profiles or other documents or materials prepared by such sponsor firms, which will be provided upon request. For additional information, documents, and/or materials, please contact sponsor firm. Advisory products are not designed for excessively traded or inactive accounts and are not appropriate for all clients. During periods of lower trading activity, client costs might be lower if our compensation was based on commissions. You must have a reasonable basis to believe that the specific program, investment manager, or strategy you recommend is appropriate for the particular client based on that client's investment profile, which takes into account, among other things, the client's investment objectives, investment experience, time horizon, liquidity needs, and risk tolerance. You and your client should carefully review the advisory disclosure document associated with the program for a full description of our services, including fees and expenses, and those fees or expenses that may be excluded. If the program involves mutual funds or exchange-traded funds, your client should consider that product's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses carefully before investing. Prior to recommending and opening advisory program accounts, financial advisors must be properly registered in their state of business. Bond values fluctuate in response to the financial condition of individual issuers, general market and economic conditions, and changes in interest rates. Changes in market conditions and government policies may lead to periods of heightened volatility in the bond market and reduced liquidity for certain bonds held by the portfolio. In general, when interest rates rise, bond values fall, and investors may lose principal value. Interest rate changes and their impact on the portfolio could be sudden and unpredictable. The use of derivatives may reduce returns and/or increase volatility. Certain investment strategies tend to increase the total risk of an investment relative to the broader market. This portfolio is exposed to high-yield securities risk and municipal securities risk. Investment strategies that are not ESG-focused strategies may consider ESG-related factors when evaluating a security for purchase, but are not prohibited from purchasing or continuing to hold securities that do not meet specified ESG criteria. Allspring Managed Account Services, the firm, is a unit within Allspring Global Investments and is responsible for the management and administration of the Allspring Funds Management LLC Retail Separately Managed Account Portfolios, RAP portfolios. Sub-advisory services are provided by Allspring Global Investments LLC, a registered investment advisor and wholly owned subsidiary of Allspring Global Investments Holdings LLC. Allspring Global Investments does not provide accounting, legal, or tax advice or investment recommendations. Any tax or legal information in this brochure is merely a summary of our understanding and interpretations of some of the current income tax regulations and is not exhaustive. Investors should consult their tax advisor or legal counsel for advice and information concerning their particular situation.
Diversification does not ensure or guarantee better performance and cannot eliminate the risk of investment losses. Beta measures fund volatility relative to general market movements. It is a standardized measure of systematic risk in comparison with a specified index. The benchmark beta is one by definition. Beta is based on historical performance and does not represent future results. This material is provided for informational purposes only and is for professional, institutional, or qualified clients, investors, not for retail use outside the U.S. This material does not constitute an offer or solicitation and in any case is not intended to be used in any jurisdiction or to any person where it would be unauthorized or unlawful to do so. Allspring Global Investments, Allspring, is the trade name for the asset management companies of Allspring Global Investments Holdings, LLC, a holding company indirectly owned by certain private funds of GTCR, LLC, and Reverence Capital Partners, LP. Unless otherwise stated, Allspring is the source of all data, which is current or, as of the date stated, past performance is not a guarantee or reliable indicator of future results. All investments contain risk. Content is provided for informational purposes only, with no representation regarding its adequacy, accuracy, or completeness, and should not be relied upon. Views, opinions, assumptions, or estimates are not necessarily that of Allspring and are subject to change without notice. And this communication does not contain investment advice, an investment recommendation, or investment research, as defined under local regulation of the respective jurisdiction. Copyright 2023 Allspring Global Investments Holdings, LLC, all rights reserved. February 2023.